Those of you who are here know, and those who are online may know, our crew, our campus crew, mostly is not here this morning because they're down in L.A. for the campus retreat. But we do have a couple of students.
Yay!
One from Merced College and one from UC Merced. We're doing well here.
And we went to a basketball game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We went to watch the Bobcats. Totally destroy the Flames or whatever they were, this other team.
The Basic University.
All right. So we're doing a series of sermons from Hebrews, and I love the book of Hebrews. Oh, my goodness. I did kind of write a book about it, so I spent a lot of time thinking about the book of Hebrews. Let me remind you just a little tiny bit from last week. The audience of Hebrews primarily is people who've been Christians for a while. It's people who probably have done some pretty great things in their Christian life, but they've reached a point where maybe they're tired, they're worn out, they're weary, or maybe they've received some persecution, and they're thinking of turning back. In the case of the audience of Hebrews, they're thinking of turning back to a safe form of Christianity, which is more along the lines of Judaism. And so that's the background. We have to make our own application because nobody here, I think, is tempted when they're weak spiritually to go back to Judaism because you never were there. So we have to make our own application, but that's kind of the background. So basically then, the purpose of the writer of Hebrews is so that you and I would make it to heaven. And there's really two things in that line. It's pretty basic. Basically, what he's going to do is he's going to point us to the awesomeness and amazingness of what we have in Jesus. All right. And words such as better, 13 times in Hebrews, and perfect, that word teleon or teleos, 15 times in the book of Hebrews. And that almost always that's referring either to Jesus directly or something we have because of the ministry of Jesus. And so we'll be talking about Jesus. And like I said, you need a thesaurus. And by the way, going through our boxes yesterday, I found two. I better look at my thesaurus. What's the plural of thesaurus? I found two thesauruses.
There you go.
All right. Of course, who uses a thesaurus anymore? Because you got your word. And he just hit thesaurus. But anyway, never mind that. I don't know why I went there. The point is this. Jesus is awesome, amazing, spectacular, wonderful, remarkable, incredible, astounding, tremendous. And Judaism is pipsqueak religion compared to that, even though Judaism was pretty amazing also. All right? And so the outline of Hebrews more or less is this. Jesus is amazing, and the religion that he is the author of is amazing compared to anything in Judaism. In fact, specifically, last Sunday, we saw that Jesus is greater than all the prophets, and Jesus is greater than the angels. And we'll see Jesus is greater than Moses today, greater than Joshua, greater than the priesthood of Aaron, greater than the high priest, greater than Abraham, a greater covenant, a greater tabernacle, and greater sacrifices. And so what the writer of Hebrews does, goes back and forth between Jesus is great in this way, therefore this is what you should do. Somebody asked me about the lettuce thing. Was that you, Ryan?
Yeah.
Right. So that's an attempted joke because Hebrews is Jesus is great and therefore here's your admonition. But those admonitions come in the form of let us. Let us. Okay, got it?
Mm-hmm.
So they're all these let us passages. And so, again, the practical take home of Hebrews is these let us passages. But if all you get from Hebrews is the practical take home lessons, you miss the main point. What's the main point? It's Jesus. Okay, got it? So then last week we looked at Jesus greater than the prophets and, you know, the really cool stuff. And then we saw he's greater than the angels. And now we're going to have our first of our exhortations. Now, the book of Hebrews is a sermon. It is a written out complete sermon. So when we're studying Hebrews or having sermons from Hebrews, I'll tend to read longer sections. I may break it down verse by verse, but Hebrews was meant to be heard. You can read it, that's great, but Hebrews was created as a sermon primarily to be heard rather than necessarily read. So normally I'll read longer sections. In fact, I'm going to read almost the entire text for this morning right now, which is Hebrews 2, 1 through 18. And by the way, if you remember, we did Hebrews 2, 5 through about 9 last week, the thing about still greater than the angels, but that's okay. Here we go. We must pay the most careful attention, therefore, to what we've heard so that we do not drift away. Got it? For since the message spoken through angels was binding, he's making the connection to the angel thing, right? And what was the message spoken to angels? What's that a reference to for Jews? The law of Moses. Because the Jews believed the law of Moses was delivered to Moses on Mount Sinai through angels. So that's what he's referring to. So he says, for since the message spoken through angels was binding, and every violation and disobedience received its just punishment, how shall we escape if we ignore so great a salvation? This salvation, which was first announced by the Lord, was confirmed to us by those who heard him. God also testified to it by signs, wonders, and various miracles, and by gifts of the Holy Spirit distributed according to his will. This is that section about angels we already read, but let's do it anyway. It's not to angels that he was subjected to the world to come, about which we are speaking, but there is a place where someone has testified. What is mankind that you are mindful of him, a son of man that you care for him? You made them a little lower than the angels. Who was them?
Us.
But he's going to make the comparison to Jesus in a minute. You crowned them with glory and honor and put everything under their feet. In putting everything under them, that is human beings, God left nothing that is not subject to them. Yet at the present, we do not see everything subject to them. But we do see Jesus, who also, I'm adding the word also for your sake there, who also was made a little lower than the angels for a little while, now crowned with glory and honor because he suffered death so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. In bringing many sons and daughters to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the pioneer of their salvation perfect through what he suffered. Both the one who makes people holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers and sisters. He says, I will declare your name to my brothers and sisters. In the assembly, I'll sing your praises. And again, I'll put my trust in him. And again, he says, here am I, the children God has sent me. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death, he might break the power of him who holds the power over death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. For surely it is not angels he helps, but Abraham's descendants. For this reason, he had to be made like them, fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people, because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. All right, so exhortation number one is this. Listen up! Pay attention! Don't fall asleep. That's it. Now, he gives us two things that he wants us to pay attention to. Number one, to what we have heard. All right? The gospel message. And number two, to our salvation. So pay attention to what you have heard. Pay attention to the message of the gospel. And then pay attention even to your own salvation. That's interesting. You know, if you don't pay attention to things, what happens? All right, if you don't pay attention to your weight, what happens? You get fat. If you don't pay attention to your health, what happens? You get sick. If you don't pay attention to your house, what happens? It gets messy first, and then it falls apart. Right? Well, what should we pay more attention to? Well, Jesus. Thank you. Tanya said Jesus. All right. By the way, the reason I'm proud of you is that I didn't list that here on the screen here. All right. But you read the, you listened to the scripture. Right. We need to pay attention to Jesus. The word pay attention in Greek is proception, which means to fix or moor a ship. And the opposite of that is to drift, right? It says pay attention so that we don't drift. And the word there is pararyon, which means to slip away as with the tides. And you know, you could be in a river. If you're in a river, you'd be going downstream. But you don't know unless you do what? You have to look to the side of the river. And that's the illustration. So Jesus then is the pier. Jesus is the thing we moor ourselves to. We tie ourselves to Jesus. Otherwise, what's the natural tendency? To drift away. Christians rarely just one thing happens and boom, they're gone. That almost never happens. No. They usually fall away through inattention, through not paying attention to the basics of the faith. So how do we avoid this? Well, first of all, take the advice we're given here, which is to anchor our lives in Jesus, in what we've been taught, and even to pay attention to our salvation. Because if we don't, our lives will be wrecked on the rocks, which happens in La Jolla all the time. These boats come up and they're wrecked on the rocks. And then he makes a reference to the Old Testament. And apparently, in the Old Testament, this was part of what was delivered by Moses. If they don't pay attention, all right, it says it was binding, and every violation and disobedience received this punishment. So if there were punishments for not paying attention to the Old Testament, what do you think would be if we don't pay attention to Jesus? Do you think the punishment would be less? He says, no, it would be greater. And it's interesting, he leads this, it says, every violation and disobedience. Now, to us, violation and disobedience, that sounds like, you know, if you have a law, you violated the law, you disobeyed the law, sounds like the same thing. But actually, the Greek words have pretty significantly different meaning. The word violation, parabasis, means rebellion. But generally, that's not the problem. It's the other word. It's parakoe, which means careless hearing. Or it's sort of like passive-aggressive Christianity. You know, after a while, if you hear the message and you don't do anything about it, over time, you just stop hearing anymore. And I believe most of us who lose our faith, it's not because of violations. Now, what happens is later on, violations happen, you know. Later on, you have those violations. But those violations are the result of a period of careless hearing, unwillingness to pay attention. Another translation would be imperfect hearing, or unwillingness to hear. So, which are you prone to? As you know, you individually, that's you don't have to raise your hand and answer the question. This is, after all, a sermon, but it's something for us to think about. Okay, the point is this: if the Jews had to pay attention to a law delivered by angels, how much more will we be held accountable if we don't pay attention to the law delivered by Jesus, the messenger? And then he says, how shall we escape? Right? He says, verse 3 says, how shall we escape if we ignore so great a salvation? And the answer is, that's a nice rhetorical question. The answer is, we won't. That's the point. We won't. That's a strong warning. And by the way, Hebrews is full of strong warnings. If you don't want strong warnings, then just skip the next, you know, 6 or 8 weeks of coming to church here, because we're going to have strong warnings, because the Hebrew writer loves you enough to give you strong warnings. And by the way, although there are a number of strong warnings in Hebrews, the overall tone of Hebrews is that the Hebrew writer is assuming, and God's assuming, you know, I'm quite confident. And that's the tone. If you read Hebrews, although there's like, man, if you know, do not turn back. You will lose your salvation. Make every effort. Grow up. Pay attention. All these things. Very, very strong and solemn warnings. The tone of the book, nevertheless, is, but I'm confident. And you're going to see the Hebrew writer say this again and again. But I'm confident of greater things in your case. And I'm confident, I know every single person in this room, I'm confident of greater things in your case. So how might we ignore, or let's say neglect, so great a salvation? By stopping looking at Jesus, obviously. That's the obvious one. By forgetting how great he is. By treating Jesus as, well, that's nice, that's good, great, okay, good. By being merely religious, that's the overall in Hebrews, by going, leaving a devoted, committed, heart all in, you know, fully life-involved Christianity, to go back to being religious. Or to stop appreciating our salvation, right? To stop appreciating our salvation and kind of grasping how valuable a thing that is. So how shall we escape if we ignore our salvation? The answer quite simply is, we will not. So don't do that. And he says, you know, this salvation, it was proclaimed, he says, verse 3 there, first announced by Jesus. Jesus told us about it. And then by those who heard him, so there were the eyewitnesses. And Hebrews was written in the late 60s. So by the late 60s, a number of the eyewitnesses are passing. But God is still attesting it to by signs, wonders, and miracles. Almost certainly reference to some of the miraculous gifts that were given on by the laying on of the hands of apostles. So even as the apostles were leaving the scene, there were people left behind with miraculous gifts. All right, and so the bottom line is we need to pay attention to the message. Now, this next section, starting in verse 5, all the way through the end of the chapter, is basically about this. It's a well, there's Hebrews 2, 5 through 9, but basically it's about Jesus became just like us. So there's several sections in Hebrews that are focusing on why Jesus is such a great high priest. The first one is this section. The second one is chapter 4 and 5, and then chapter 7. So we're going to have several things on why Jesus is the great, great high priest. Now, verse 5 through 9, I don't need to say much about that because I already talked about it, but basically said Jesus, who was obviously greater than the angels, for a brief time became lower than the angels. Why? And he makes this interesting argument. We were meant to be, God made us to be greater than the angels, to rule over the earth, even to judge angels, but we messed up real bad. And we're in a bad spot. So Jesus, who was way up here, it was like, it was supposed to be Jesus, us, angels, and then dogs and cats, I guess, I don't know. It sort of became Jesus, angels, us. So Jesus basically became like us. He became like us in every way. And because he became like us, therefore we can become like him. And that's a cool takeaway lesson from this morning. The bottom line, Jesus, our Savior, can relate to us. He can definitely relate to us. All right, so I'm going to pick it up in verse 9. Says, but we do see Jesus, who is made lower than the angels for a little while, now crowned with glory. So Jesus came down He became a cat to live amongst the cats to save the cats. He became a cockroach to live amongst the cockroaches to save the cockroaches. He became like us so that we could become like him. But now he reminds us that, sure, he was walking around in a body. He was a regular Joe Schmo. All right, ate food, slept, all that sort of stuff. But now he is seated at the right hand of God. That's where he is right now. And then, so he's going to talk about a bunch of things that Jesus did for us. So he was made a little lower than the angels for a while, all right? But I'm telling you, although he may have been lower than the angels in position, he was never lower than the angels in importance, only in power, and only for a brief period of time. But like it says in Hebrews 2:16, he didn't come here to help angels. He came here to help the children of Abraham, which is us. So this entire next section is about Jesus became like us, right? In bringing many sons and daughters, the glory was fitting that God, for whom and through everything exists, should make the pioneer of their salvation perfect through what he suffered. And again, this is going to be mentioned more than once in the book of Hebrews, which is that he's going to be made perfect. Now, probably you thought Jesus was already perfect before he ever came here is perfect. And the whole time he was here, he is perfect. And I'm sure you think he's also now perfect. Now, in one sense, it's true because Jesus never sinned. So he was perfect, morally perfect. But he was not perfect in that he was not complete, because he needed to become like us so that we could become like him. And that's what we're talking about. So it says in verse 10, it says that he became the pioneer of our salvation. That word pioneer, that's a great word. It's archagon, like archetype, the archetype, which is sort of the paradigm of something. He became the paradigm of our salvation, the pioneer of our salvation. It could also be translated the author of our salvation. So it's interesting because Jesus is the author of our salvation, and because he came here, he became the completer of our salvation. Because that word teleion can mean perfect, or complete, or finished. So Jesus was the pioneer of our salvation. He showed the way to be saved. He pointed the way to be saved. And now he's complete and he's in heaven. He's the beginning of our salvation. He's the middle of our salvation. And he's the completer of our salvation. God initiated our salvation, certainly not ourselves. And God completed our salvation. In Hebrews 12:2, it says that Jesus is the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. He's the one who initiated our faith. The pioneer and perfecter of our faith. Yeah, the one who initiated the faith and the one who completed the faith. He's the beginning. He's the middle. He's the end. We saw that in Hebrews 1:1-3 last Sunday. And he says, because he came here, we're of the same family. If Jesus hadn't come here, we wouldn't be of the same family as Jesus. He'd be the Lord up in the palace. And we'd be the peasant who doesn't even get to enter the Lord's house ever. But because he came here, we are part of his family. Verse 10, because he suffered. Because he suffered, he can relate to us, right? Verse 10. He should make the pioneer of their salvation perfect through what he suffered. And everything that you and I suffer, Jesus suffered. You feel lonely. Jesus felt lonely. You feel abandoned. Jesus felt abandoned. You feel depressed. Jesus was, I don't know about depressed, but discouraged, that's for sure. Jesus suffered in every way like us. So that's how he became a perfect, complete, wonderful, and awesome Savior. All right, verse 13, it says, and again, I will put my trust in him. Again, he says, here I am and the children God has given me. Again, Jesus has made us part of his family. In verse 14 and 15, since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death we might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives are held in slavery. So because Jesus willingly became like a slave, he's able to free the slaves. And by the way, in just a few verses, we're going to talk about Moses, and the parallels between Jesus and Moses definitely is along these lines. Because like Jesus, who was at the right hand of the Father in heaven, who came down and lived amongst the slaves to save the slaves, similarly, Moses was in the palace. He was the adopted son of Pharaoh. And what did Moses do? He walked out of the palace. Now, there was some sin involved, but you know, we don't have that parallel with Jesus. But Moses walked out of the palace because in order to save the Jews who were slaves, he needed to leave the palace and come live amongst the slaves. And so what Moses did set the pattern for what Jesus was going to do. Verse 17, it says, for this reason he had to be made like them, fully human in every way. There is no way other than sinning that Jesus did not become human. Why? In order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God. That's why he is a great high priest. Because he became like us, we can become like him. Because he suffered as we do, he can relate. And we're going to see in chapter 4, he has sympathy. He has empathy because of that. In becoming human, Jesus forged a way for us to come into the presence of God. Jesus is pretty amazing. I would say that. All right. So like it says here, Jesus is the Archagos or Archagon, the author, the founder, the pioneer, the source, the origin, the one who goes first, both to make and to point the way. Like I said, he's like Davy Crockett. Is it Daniel Boone or Davy Crockett? Which is the one who went into Tennessee there? Davy Crockett, all right? He went over the Cumberland Gap, and he went there, and he forged the way. And then thousands and later millions followed him. He's kind of like that, except spiritually. That's what he is. But he's not just the archagos, the archetype, if you will, of our salvation. He's the teleos of our salvation. He's the one who completes it, who perfects it. He points the way, but he's also the one who completes the journey, and he's waiting. He's waiting. So now we're kind of on that trail. Following the Cumberland Trail after we went through the Cumberland Gap. And what we know is Jesus is waiting there for us. He's both the initiator and the completer of our salvation. You know, Jesus can relate to us. And the old-fashioned factories, the factories aren't like this anymore. But in the old-fashioned factories, what you had is the boss up in this air-conditioned glass room. And the boss is sitting there looking down on the factory floor, making sure everybody's working hard. So what's the boss doing? Making sure everybody's working hard. So Jesus, he was up there. He was in the glass, air-conditioned office. But what he did was he came down on the factory floor. And he didn't just come down on the factory floor. He actually worked the machines. He got his hands dirty. He sweated. He suffered. He got his finger poked with a needle or his hand punched with the punch machine or whatever it was. That's who Jesus is. Jesus is amazing. No other religion has anything like this. No man-made religion has God becoming man so that man can become God. He became like us so we could become like him. He is a great high priest. So what should we do? Pay attention. Listen up. Don't space out. Hang in there. Don't fall asleep at the wheel. Don't ignore your salvation. Remind yourself on a regular basis how blessed you are. How am I doing? All right, good. I've got a little bit more time. So I'm going to start Hebrews chapter 3. Now, I admit I'm changing subject, but not really. Because who was the pioneer and perfecter of leaving Egypt? It was Moses. So since he just made that point, he said, oh, yeah, by the way, that reminds me about Moses. All right, Moses is nothing compared to Jesus. Now, in Judaism, to say something about Moses other than how amazing he is, you might get a punch in the nose, or somebody might tackle you, or they might get really, really upset at you. But we've got this Hebrews chapter 3, verse 1, which is our transition verse to the part about Moses. So let's read Hebrews 3, verses 1 through 6. Yeah, Melody, pay attention. Stay in here. Don't go over there. Pay attention. All right. Therefore, holy brothers and sisters. All right, look up here. Just kidding. I saw somebody looking at it. No, sorry. Just an illustration, but all right. Therefore, holy brothers and sisters who share in the heavenly calling, fix your thoughts on, Tanya?
Jesus.
On Jesus, right? Whom we acknowledge as our apostle and high priest. He was faithful to the one who appointed him, just as Moses was faithful. Now, what the Hebrew writer does, he often says, Jesus is like them in certain ways, but is greater than them in other ways. He's going to talk about the covenant. The new covenant is like the old covenant in some ways, but it's greater in other ways. The sacrifices are like those of the old covenant in some ways, but they're greater in other ways. So he's going to say, Jesus is like Moses. Oh, but Jesus is so much greater than Moses. Please, stop paying so much attention to Moses. Start paying attention to Jesus. Got it? He was faithful to the one who appointed him, just as Moses was faithful in all God's house. Jesus has been found worthy of greater honor than Moses. Now, that would start a fight. In Jewish circles, saying somebody is greater than Moses, that's going to start a fight just right there. All right? Just as the builder of a house has greater honor than the house. So which is more important, the house or the builder of the house? Well, obviously, the builder of the house is greater than the house. All right? For every house is built by someone, but God is the builder of everything. Moses was faithful as a servant in all God's house. That's true. Bearing witness to what would be spoken by God in the future. But Christ is faithful as son over God's house. And we are his house. If indeed we hold firmly to our confidence in the hope in which we glory. Again, he reminds us, but we better hold firmly to our confidence until the end. Otherwise, we may lose that, which is going to head us into the next section that I'm definitely not going to cover this morning. So let me look at a few ways that Jesus is like Moses, but also greater than Moses. All right, the parallels between Jesus and Moses are unmissable, unless you weren't looking for it. For example, think about how Moses started. A baby. A Jewish slave baby, and the king of Egypt thinks he's going to replace him. It's crazy. So what's he do? He doesn't know who to kill, so he decides to kill all the Jewish male babies. Can you think of another king, another powerful king, around 1,500 years later, who also had this crazy idea that a Jewish baby, peasant baby, was going to replace him? So he didn't know what to do? So he decided to kill all the male Jewish babies? Oh, yeah. Do you think that's a coincidence? I don't think so. Because Moses is like Jesus. And then Moses was called by God out of Egypt. And in Hosea 11:1 it says, out of Egypt I called my son. Who is that son that he called out of Egypt? Well, first of all, it's Joseph, whose bones were taken out of Egypt. It's Moses who left Egypt. But when Jesus was born, where did he have to go?
Egypt.
Down to Egypt. And so God called his son Jesus out of Egypt, as he called Moses out of Egypt, and as he will call us out of Egypt. That's Hebrews chapter 3 and 4. All right, so in order to prepare for his ministry, Moses wasn't quite ready. All right, so what did he do? He went into the desert for how long? For 40 years. Jesus is about to start his ministry, so he has to go into the desert as well to prepare for his ministry. For him, it was 40 days, 40 years, because he's Jesus and he's greater than Moses. All right, Moses, like I said, and it's a reference back to earlier in chapter 2, Moses was at the right hand of the king. He had everything. He had the best clothes, the best money, the best education, all the girlfriends, all that sort of stuff. And like Jesus, who was at the right hand of the Father, Moses walked voluntarily out of the palace, because you need to become a slave to save those who are enslaved. And that is exactly the point he made in chapter 2. Moses had Aaron to speak for him. Jesus had John the Baptist to speak for him. Moses saved physical Israel from physical slavery in physical Egypt. Jesus saves spiritual Israel from spiritual slavery in spiritual Egypt. They were baptized into Moses, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 1, as we are baptized into Christ. Moses gave them bread. Well, actually, he didn't, because God did. But Jesus is the bread of life. Moses called water out of a rock, and Jesus sends the Holy Spirit, which is a stream of water to everlasting life. Moses went up on Mount Sinai to meet God. Jesus went up on the Mount of Transfiguration to meet God. And who else was there? Moses was there. But Jesus is so much greater than Moses. And that's pretty much what he's saying in this passage. All right, he says, Moses was a household servant, but Jesus owns the house. Jesus created the house. Now, for us, we wouldn't think this way, but for them, when you come into the house, you don't look at the servant, you look at the head of the household. We probably don't think that way, but that's certainly how they would have thought that way. And he says, Moses was faithful in God's house, but Jesus was faithful over God's house. Moses received the law, but Jesus is the law. Moses gave them bread, but Jesus is the bread. Jesus is greater than Moses in every possible way you could ever imagine. In Deuteronomy 18, 17 through 19, we don't need to go there, but God told the people of Israel through Moses that I'm going to raise up a prophet like you, Moses, from among his people. And, oh, in fact, let's even read it, because basically what he says is, therefore, pay attention. So let's read that verse. Deuteronomy 18. Deuteronomy 18, 17 through 19. Yeah. The Lord says, this is when Jethro told Moses that he needs to raise somebody up. The Lord said to me, are you there? Deuteronomy 18, starting verse 17. The Lord said to me, what they say is good. I'll raise up for them a prophet like you, like Moses, from among their fellow Israelites. I will put my words in his mouth. He will tell them everything I command him. I myself will call to account anyone who does not listen to my words that the prophet speaks in my name. It's almost like a verse straight out of Hebrews, right? It said, pay attention to the gospel delivered first of all by Jesus, then by his servants, and also attested to by signs, wonders, and miracles. Jesus made Moses what he is. Moses was great, no doubt. And the Bible describes him as the most humble man who ever lived. That is, before Jesus came. But let's pay attention to Jesus. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus. Not on leaders, not on church things, not on church politics, not on external politics. Let us this morning resolve to pay attention, to fix our eyes on Jesus, the author, the pioneer, the completer, the perfecter of our faith. Thank you very much. Oh, I get some clapping. That's nice. That's nice. Now what's next? Oh, now we do a song, I guess. Now we do a song. Okay. 700 and something. 700 and something. Just to make it simple for y'all. For all y'all.